those questions, we're afraid of them because we're not sure if they can be answered. All I can say is, oh, wow, can they? Yes. God's way wins because it's true. And it is true. And He is good and right and just. And doubt is an invitation to thicken up your faith.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Life Reframed. I'm Lauren Morgan.
And I'm Rick Dunn.
And we have a special guest with us today, Rick.
Yeah, you know, Lauren, again, 2022, for all its ups and downs and sideways and everything that it is, it's a great start for Life Reframed. We have another wonderful guest today.
We do. So let's go ahead and introduce her, and then I want to talk about a couple of 2022 things, just housekeeping stuff before we really dig in. But I don't like, you know, people just being like, where is the guest? When are they going to bring the guest in? Why are they doing this? So we have Stacy Johnson with us today. Hey, Stacy.
Hello. Thanks for having me. This is fun.
We're glad you're here.
Oh, yeah. It's so fun. Rick, can you give us like a real quick rundown about Stacy? And then Stacy, I'd love for you to share a little bit about yourself.
That sounds great. So I'll give a little bit of overview. One, I count you, Stacy, as a friend, as a colleague for almost a decade together.
Yeah.
And both of us, we would say, have both grown through many different kinds of experiences in ourselves and our journey. We've talked a lot about that and in our relationship and partnership. And you have a particular calling and vision in your life related to disciple making. Trailer, Lauren, if you're a listener, like, oh, worldview, now here we go in down the intellectual apologetics, I'm lost. No. It's Life Reframed. I'm telling you, this connects to your life, your conversation, and your neighbors. So you're going to love this episode. But Stacy, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, yeah, I am originally from New Orleans. I moved there.
Love your Tigers, love your Cajun food, right?
Yeah, I love the Cajun food. I can't get Cajun food around here, y'all.
I know.
I'm sure there's a couple places I could, but I cook it myself.
There you go.
So, yeah, loved growing up in New Orleans. My dad's a musician, so that can tell you a lot. He was a musician in the Navy, and then I moved to Los Angeles. And so I came here from Los Angeles in 2009, here thinking I was going to be in academia. I was going to teach philosophy. I was going to share Christ in the classroom. I mean, that's the way I was headed.
And you'd been in crew for a number of years.
Yes.
Where you'd been on university campuses, sharing Christ, leading teams.
Yeah, I had been in parachurch ministry for 10 years.
Gotcha.
And that parachurch ministry, I started working with medical students. And my medical students, it was right around the time of the Terri Schiavo case. Do y'all remember that?
Mm-hmm.
She was a young woman who was in a persistent vegetative state. And there was all of this question of, is it okay to unplug her feeding source? So my students start coming to me. I'm in my late 20s. Stacy, what does the Bible say about this? And I froze. And I know how to share the gospel. I know how to walk through the first five follow-ups of crew. What do I do? So I started taking ethics classes at the local seminary
just to learn.
And that's where kind of the journey into philosophy took me.
And here in Knoxville.
I'm here in Knoxville, in 2009. And then met some of the pastoral staff, met Kevin Huggins, who's on staff here. And he just kind of said, hey, can you do a few things? And I met my husband here, by the way, met him, and we got married when I was 37.
Wonderful.
And then 3 years later, I got the call and said, hey, would you like to come on staff? And I thought, what do you want me to do? I'm weird. I'm not the typical journey.
Kevin said, you should hear her teach in some of our environments. You really want to pursue her for disciple making. And we had a lunch, and you said,
we did.
You said, if we're about disciple making, I want to be on board. And I said, we are, but it's going to be a journey. And it has been. And also, you have a sweet little girl.
I do. Oh, Gracie, she's 8.
She's adorable.
She's in third grade now, so she's a huge blessing.
Yeah, I love when Gracie walks in the room, big smiles, always great conversation. So we're so glad you're here.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm thrilled.
We are. And we've wanted to have you on for a long time, Stacy, and I think the timing is so right for this. And it's funny, small little intersection in our stories. I mean, tiny little intersection, but that case you were talking about that got you kind of started on ethics and all that. I was going through pre-med stuff at the time. And so that case, we studied a ton in bioethics, which was one of my absolute favorite courses in college. But I have not continued down that path of the ethics and everything. Like you just know this all so well. And I'm like, I hope I can hold a conversation with Stacy.
Well, that's the beauty of it. And I think why we want to do this, Lauren, is because it's one of the things your heart, Stacy, is for us to not raise it to the level of academia,
right,
but to really bring it down to the conversations with our neighbors we're having every day about some really big issues right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what is so great. And I'm looking forward to doing that today. Let's dig in. And I think a good starting point is kind of that, like, Stacy, I am someone, I enjoy intellectual conversations, but I would not consider myself as someone who feels confident to go into, like, if, like Rick said at the beginning of the episode, like, we're going to talk about worldview. I hear that, I'm probably going to check out because sure. I don't feel like I can confidently hang in that type of conversation. I find it interesting, but I don't feel like I'm well versed enough to be able to give a good, like, give and take in the conversation. I have watched you have conversations with many people. A highlight really is seeing you and Greg go back and forth on issues. It's fascinating. It is a privilege to have gotten to see that several times. But I hear that and I'm like, okay, this may not be the conversation for me, but I would love to hear why you say, like, no, this is for everybody. Like, this is for you too. This is not just like high level philosophical discussion.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think about the moment I had with my daughter just a few weeks ago. We're in the car, we're on our way to school. We had just seen that movie Aladdin, the new remake.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had just seen it and she starts asking, can God do anything? Can God do anything? And she's asking the same question over and over again. And I'm thinking, yes, sweetie, what is she not getting here? And so she said, can God do anything like the genie? And it was very telling to me that that's what she had in her mind. So mm-hmm. there's something in her mind when she's asking me the question, right? And I promise I'm getting to your answer, Lauren. What happens is I then start explaining to her the difference between God and the Aladdin blue genie, right? The genie in Aladdin. And I struggle. Yeah, and I've been in seminary classes, yep. 66 hours of seminary classes. And I'm sitting there trying to say, how do I take all of that and give it away to my 8-year-old daughter who can understand how this connects with the question she's asking? Then she asked a very poignant question. She said, we have a friend who is blind.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Mommy, can God heal her? Now, by the way, we've read the passages in the scripture where Jesus healed the blind too.
Right.
Right. And so the answer is yes. Mommy, why doesn't he? Now, my daughter, 8 years old, has just asked a very grown-up question.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Lauren, that's my answer. My answer is it matters. There's this way of thinking about worldview where it's those people in the academic world that do it. And frankly, I don't really need, as a mom, to be an expert in all the academic ways. Like, can we just get that out the way? You don't need that. But what I do need to do is I need to help her rightly interpret an experience. She's having an experience. She's taking in culture. So she's taking in the movie Aladdin. She's got this idea of the genie. She's heard from me in church, the idea of God. She sits in our church. She's listened, Rick, to you. She's listened to Greg. And so she's trying to put all those pieces together. And then she's hit a question. It's a great question. So the first thing, by the way, I told her was, Gracie, you have asked a very grown-up question, and I am very proud of you.
I love that.
So there's got to be a way that I can, and that we can, as people of God being formed in Christ, to give away our faith in a simple but not simplistic. We no longer live in a world where simplistic works. Our faith is not simplistic, but it is simple. So we have to just learn how to do that. Does that kind of answer that?
Yeah, I think that's so good, Stacy. And that's such a great point. And obviously I have children around the same age. Well, my middle child and Gracie are the same age, Izzy and Gracie are. And Izzy is my kid who asks lots of questions mm-hmm. too. And sometimes I'm like, I wouldn't have thought to ask that. I do not know how to answer that. So that's such a great point. But even, you know, I think about whether it's our kids asking those questions or the number of conversations I've had even in the last week with people about, well, why would God allow this to happen? Or why would this happen? Like, and even, you know, I think about, my, like your, Gracie was talking about her friend who's blind, and my nephew was born deaf. He can't hear. Will it always be that way? I don't know. No, we don't know. So we grapple in the reality of that every day, right? But why can't he hear? Or why was my baby born and then died? Or why, you know, like all of these things that are part of our everyday lives, whether we know somebody personally who's going through something really hard, or whether it's just questions of why are we still going through all of this COVID stuff 2 years later? Like, can God not just make it go away? Like, that was a really good question I thought that one of my kids asked. Can't God make COVID go away? Mm-hmm. Like, we have so much everyday life to be addressed by you, what you're talking about here.
Yeah.
Stacey.
And you're talking about the kind of questions, Lauren, that won't be ignored. These aren't, you can kind of pass them off into the side of your mind for a while, but they will haunt you. These are basic questions about things like, is life good? Who am I? Where do I belong in the world? Why am I here? Those kinds of deep, what philosophers call existential angst and questions, but they haunt us if we don't find a way to make sense of them. And so the story of God, the story of the reality in which we live, who God is, why we are here, who he has created us to be, those are the anchorings and the foundations that he has provided for us to be able to live well in the world with full confidence, with compassion, and with joy, even when there is great grief.
So worldview, as you've described it, which is why it's so compelling, and we're going to just get rid of that word now because I want to ask you to give us better language for how we can think about it. But it's very consistent, Lauren, with what we do on Life Reframed, where in Life Reframed, we make a huge emphasis on remembering which story we're in. We're in the big story, not the little story. And that's where you're taking us. Help us understand a little bit more just how you frame that, how we can start to get a handle on it. Because as you said, those questions aren't just not going to go away. Those are questions if we don't press in, we're really having a very thin kind of faith.
Right. And so, and can really end up shipwrecking.
Yeah.
You know, our faith can get shipwrecked.
Particularly as you get older.
Especially as you get older. Because as we get older, I find that sometimes the injury and the pain just mounts because there's more of life and there's more of the brokenness that we see.
And there's more, as you described, and we all feel it, there's more, the cultural environment we're in is less and less aware of the story, less and less conversant in the story, and even in some ways more antagonistic towards the story. So we're in
very
a moment,
much.
Stacey, where these questions are so important. And I know that your passion, help us think about this and how we get there.
So when I think about what it's like to be a follower of Jesus in this moment and be someone who wants to live in the real story and give it away, I think about what it's like to play a virtual reality game. So I went to a friend's house and he had this virtual reality game. It was Iron Man, which, by the way, I'm a huge Marvel fan.
Okay.
And so like this is like dream come true. I'm suited up. I'm jumping out of an airplane. This is awesome. And so I put the goggles on. I put the earphones on. If you've ever played a VR game, have y'all done that?
Have you done, Lauren?
We had an Oculus for Christmas. And so we've been, you know, venturing into the world of virtual reality. And Stacey, I have been joking that I'm like, this world's pretty tough. I think it's time to go into a different one.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to do that, right?
There's a lot to unpack in that statement too.
There is a lot right there. I'm gonna use that quote, Lauren. So you go into this, you're in a game. It's not real. I am not really in Iron Man uniform. I'm not really jumping out of a plane, but all of my senses, my blood pressure's going up before I jump out that plane.
I've heard that. I've never done it, but I've heard the same thing from some people. Like, I can't take this. It's so intense, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of like being in, if you ever go to a scary movie, you actually feel scared. You're safely in a theater, but you're being fooled to think everything in you is telling you you're someplace else. And so what a VR game does is you're in a room. You think you're living in one story, but here I am in a real room, though. I mean, there's furniture. There are things I can trip over. I have my friends behind me yelling at me, "Stacey, don't back up." Well, I have earphones in. I can't hear them. And so I am in a false reality, but I'm in a real room. And so what I start to do, and you can go on YouTube and look these up, they're called virtual reality fails. You have people destroying their televisions because they throw something at it or they bump into it.
Really?
Huge damage in their home because you don't know you're in a real room. You
and
forget.
Maybe injuring themselves even, right?
And that's what's happening. We are seeing a culture where we're watching people get mortally wounded and impaled. And it's happening because they are not interpreting their experiences according to reality. And so the Colson Center has this great line. They say, ideas have consequences and bad ideas have victims. And we're seeing people mortally wounded on ideas. But if you think that as a believer, what we do is, well, if I just believe it rightly, like as if the idea is where all the power is, actually, no. It's actually learning to live in the story, not just believe the story. And so I don't love the term worldview. I don't love the term apologetics, because although I can kind of swim in those waters, I prefer to use the phrase cultural discipleship.
Yeah, unpack that a little bit, because I it's really what you were saying earlier, Lauren. If the thing pops up, worldview, apologetics, you're like, well, that's interesting, probably not something I'm going to really engage. But these questions and this metaphor of the virtual reality, not only do we have to work through that, but we watch our children work through that. And if we're paying attention at all, we're seeing a culture that's really being damaged by a false reality and not understanding the bigger story. So this is a big deal. So unpack mm-hmm. cultural disciple making.
Well, cultural discipleship is a kind of discipleship that takes into account the ideological and personal pressures in culture.
Okay.
And so that's the ideas. So I have to take into account the ideas of culture and take into account the personal push of culture. So what I think about is, you know, a young woman I sit with, and she is trying to navigate the waters of her relationships with her family, who are in all different kinds of places around the issue of sexuality. So we're talking about orientation. We're talking about issues of gender and transition, all of that. And she's a believer. She's the only believer in her family. Well, there's two things going on there.
So she's really literally, you have two very different ways of interpreting the reality everyone's experiencing. To go back to your phrase, she's interpreting reality very differently in that moment.
She is.
But how do you have that conversation and how do you work through that?
Right. And so half of the conversation is, and we spend half of our time just talking about her relationships, talking about the personal moment of having to wrestle with, well, what if I get rejected by my family? What if I get rejected by my mom or my dad or my siblings? I'm the only believer in my family, and these waters feel really hostile to me. And the grief around that and the courage that God has to give her to be able to walk through those moments. And so that's what I mean by the personal pressure. But then there really are ideas here. These are ideas that are present, namely things like the idea that you were born and there were a couple of people in the room that assigned you your sex, and that may or may not be right. And so now you have to go find your true self. And now if my interest bumps against yours, you're a bad person, I'm a good person, and we can't even be in relationship anymore. That's all in the realm of ideas.
And we can really see a culture that's being stressed pretty intensely right now among ways to either interpret those ideas, push against them, push for them, get louder on both sides, begin to vilify the person who doesn't agree the way you think. There's just so, and it feels like all of that, the personal wounds that come from that ideological clash, those things are not what the scriptures intended about how we would live our story. That's not how we're supposed to live in it. And yet I kind of feel like, Lauren, I feel like most people either go on the attack or they just completely retreat. Like,
right.
Right. Don't you think that it's just like, it's so hard to stay in it because you don't know what to do. So you either go after it or you pull back.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And I think that's why we feel like we see people who are really passionate about it and excited about it. And like they're on the attack. And then we see other people who are like, I can't even engage in that conversation because I don't know where to begin or what to do. So that is something I feel like tracks with my reality.
Yeah,
of
so
what
much.
I see in my
and
life.
And we have to model a different way, because if I'm someone who sees others on the attack, I'm going to go, I don't want to be that.
Right.
Right. I mean, what does it look like to love my neighbor in grace and truth? Be courageous, but also compassionate.
Oh, that's such a good one. Courageous and compassionate.
Oh, absolutely. It's not just that the story of God, it's not just that the gospel is true. The gospel is also better. Hmm. Like, my neighbor wants this. They just don't know it yet. Mm-hmm. Like, do we believe that? Do we believe that the way of Jesus is actually better? And it's beautiful and it's good. And what cultural discipleship is, it's a way of saying we need to disciple. We need to walk with Jesus and help others walk with Jesus in a way that gives the gospel away with winsome, compelling character. And that character is courageous and compassionate.
And so that's both, it's a personal learning journey for ourselves, because as the questions that we were talking about before, Gracie's questions, Lauren, the questions you were describing, those questions are they are very personal and they are very real, but it seems to me like we would have to be willing to be compassionate and courageous in our own personal journey if we're going to be able to do that with the world. And I'm pretty sure that's a part of what you're doing in cultural discipleship, is you're helping people learn how to live in those spaces, mm-hmm. in their own lives, and then have those conversations with others. Is that an accurate way to describe it?
Yes, definitely. And I would say that one of the most common experiences that I have is I'll meet with someone who comes to me with a question like this, like, how do I navigate my family around issues like sexuality? And what begins to come out, what begins to emerge, is not just, this person is not just pressed for how to give it away. This person is pressed for how to believe it themselves. And so I often get this moment where someone's sitting across from me going, I know the right answers, right? Because I meet with a lot of Christians. I know the right answers. I know the teaching. I know this is right, especially like the issue around sexuality. It's right to one man, one woman, context, marriage, gender, fixed, all that. But then she'll look at me and she'll go, but I don't know why. Mm. And it's really hard to be compelled in the rich goodness of God if you don't know why it's good. And okay. So it's just calling us to a deeper kind of discipleship.
Okay, so it's, and I have adult children and mm-hmm. they're friends. And so I'm very familiar with all these topics. I mean, yeah.
You're right there.
Right there, yes. And deeply enjoy the conversations, although you've got to be compassionate and courageous to enter into them, right? So, mm-hmm. but I'm thinking about this. This is such a truth, particularly like if say someone's raised in the church or their family's raised in the church, and all of a sudden the questions start coming up. It's like, yeah, I know it says that. And I, because of my faith, I'm going to believe that it's true. But over time, if I can't really find a way to reconcile it to the bigger story, if I don't understand what's underneath that, if I don't understand how that reflects God, and I'm going to fall one of two ways. I'm just going to shut down because mm-hmm. It's just too hard, because these are hard conversations. Or as Lauren said, we're going to go after someone, and that neither one of theirs are going to go well. And so what's your encouragement to people?
Yeah, I would say really two that come immediately to mind. The first is be honest about your own questions.
That's so good.
Be honest about your own pressure points. I think sometimes we are afraid that deep down feeling of, is God really good? Is this really the right way? Is this a good way? Is this a good for my neighbor way? Those questions, we're afraid of them because we're not sure if they can be answered. All I can say is, oh, wow, can they? Yes. Mm. God's way wins because it's true. Mm. And it is true. And he is good and right and just. And doubt is an invitation to thicken up your faith.
I love that.
That's what doubt is. Doubt is not a threat. It is an invitation to thicken up your faith.
That
so I would say we need to be honest about that.
That is a great reframe. Being honest, being courageous, and being compassionate about, it's okay to have those questions.
Well, yeah.
And it's even good to have those questions,
it is
right?
good. And we need to become a community and a place of people where we can ask one another those questions and wrestle together. That's my second encouragement. Do this with other people. It cannot be you and a book.
That is
you need other people to speak the story into you and you to speak the story into them. And as we're living out the story, we learn with one another that our doubt leads us to thicken up those places, because that's God's faithfulness. He does it over and over and over again.
That is really powerful.
That's so good, Stacy.
Isn't that great, Lauren? I just think it's a great reframe. Stacy, thank you for, I feel like it's more than being an advocate for this. I feel like you embody it and you invite us to learn with you, just like you're describing. So thank you so much for that.
Thanks. I love it. Love doing it with
y'all. Stacy, it was really fun to have this conversation with you today. Thank you for being here with us.
Oh, absolutely.
We need to bring Stacy back on and dig into a couple of heavy hitting topics.
There's all kinds of threads we can pull, and we will pull those. And I would think, Lauren, as we go into those, it'd be great. Now we have this first episode. People can come back. Hey, listen to this. You'll understand how it is we're going about this. So it's a great foundation, and we're really thankful for it.
For sure. Yeah. Well, Stacy, thanks again. And thank you, everybody, for listening. We hope that your new year... We're almost through the first month. We hope that your new year, though, has been off to a good start. And we will see you next time. We appreciate you being here. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to Life Reframed. We want to thank everybody who makes this possible, in particular, Sam Scott, our producer, Laura Benner, who keeps us on track, and Alex Diefendurfer, who oversees the communications work that goes behind this. Thank you all for being here. We love hearing from you. If you want to reach out to us, you can find our information in the show notes, and we would love a review on Apple Podcasts, as it just helps the podcast be seen by more people. Thanks for being here. We can't wait to see you next time.